Welcome to episode 690 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is a spotlight episode on Uncanny X-Men number 10. It's the final issue of the X-Men Disassembled storyline, the weekly event that basically is sort of resetting the X-Men corner of the Marvel Universe, and we have sort of a fresh start, a great jumping on point going forward. So this entire storyline has been written by Matthew Rosenberg, Kelly Thompson, and Ed Brisson, and they handle the writing on this issue as well. The art is by Pere Perez. We have colors by Rochelle Rosenberg, letters by VC's Joe Caramagna. So just a quick reminder of what's been going on in the X-Men Disassembled storyline. X-Man, Nate Gray, showed up and he decided that he was going to use this incredibly higher level of power than he ever had exhibited before. He's practically omnipotent, and he was going to use that power to forcibly change the world in terms of the ecology, stop humans from poisoning the planet, and stop religion and people and wars and people fighting against each other. And he took over control of the minds of Magneto, Blob, Omega Red, and Archangel to be his four horsemen of salvation. And the X-Men eventually freed Archangel, but we saw in the last issue that X-Man, after having merged with Legion to become the most powerful telepathic being that's probably ever existed in the Marvel Universe, once he had that level of power, he turned Storm into one of his horsemen of salvation. So now Storm is pitting herself against the X-Men. So at the toward the end of last issue, Jean, realizing how overmatched they were, basically sent out a telepathic distress call to everybody who had ever been an X-Man ever to hopefully fight against this Legion X-Man hybrid and perhaps save the day. So that's where this final issue of the storyline starts off. We're on Quadra Island, which is where X-Man was making his headquarters, and we see him there still in the body of Legion, his four horsemen standing before him, Omega Red, Magneto, Storm, and Blob. And Magneto says, "Stay behind us, Lord. We'll deal with these heathens. There's no reason for you to get your hands dirty." And the X-Man slash Legion hybrid says, "No, it's okay. If they truly want a battle, then they shall have it." And he steps forward, and the battle is joined between these five beings and, 20, 30 X-Men? I mean, there's a lot of them. So Cannonball says, "I have a clear path. I'm going to take this sucker down once and for all." And he flies toward X-Man at his absolute fastest speed. And Jean's warning Sam not to engage on his own. But Sam says, "No, it's fine. Just make sure to keep the path clear." And of course, at the last moment, X-Man looks up and sees Sam and just obliterates him, basically. He says, "Wow, Sam, you really didn't think it would be this easy. Well, I guess I shouldn't expect more from a country bumpkin like yourself." And Sam crashes into the ground. He looks very injured. His sister Paige, or Husk, runs over to him. And he looks like he's in really rough shape. So Armor orders Pixie to teleport Sam away to get medical attention. And of course, Pixie's like, "No, they need me here. I can't leave the fight." And Armor, again, showing her leadership skills, she certainly has sway over this younger group of X-Men. She says, "You know what? He needs a doctor. Get him out of here. You can come right back." So Husk then peels off her outer layer of skin, revealing a metal exterior, and is ready to join the fight, saying, "I'm going to make X-Men pay for what he's done to my brother." So meanwhile, Storm is telling the X-Men that they can't win this fight and they should stop their foolishness and bow down to X-Man before it's too late. And she's a force to be reckoned with. She's calling down lightning and taking out a lot of the X-Men on her own. Likewise, Omega Red, we see Honey Badger and X-23 slicing off his tentacles, saying we need to keep this guy's keep attacking his tentacles, cut them all off, and he won't be able to fight back. But it's Omega Red, right? As fast as they cut him off, he just grows new ones. So meanwhile, Jean is calling for Psylocke and the Cuckoos, Sage, No Girl, basically all the X-Men and former X-Men who have any sort of telepathic abilities. And she's saying, you need to join me because X-Man's combining his powers with Legion, and there's no way we'll be able to defeat X-Man unless we separate them. So if we work together, maybe we can separate the two and we'll have a chance. And she telepathically tells everybody else to keep attacking and buy the telepaths, the psychics, the time they need to try to break through. So all the telepaths head over toward Jean, except for Psylocke. She says, listen up. I know that we need to stop X-Men, but we need to stop Storm first, because I don't think we stand a chance of stopping X-Men unless we can break his control over Storm. Like, she's going to keep attacking. She's single-handedly going to wipe out the rest of the X-Men, and Nate Grey won't have to do anything. That's how powerful Storm is. So I want to come and help you and lend you my psychic ability and my psychic power, but we need to stop Storm first. And Jean says, you know what? You're right. We've got to try our best to combat X-Man and separate him from Legion without you, Psylocke, but you need to hurry because we need all hands on deck. And so Psylocke then calls out to Angel. She manifests her psychic sword and psychic shield, and Angel comes and picks her up, and they fly towards Storm. So meanwhile, the other telepathic X-Men surround X-Man, Nate Grey, as best they can. Jean says, form a perimeter and focus on joining our powers together. And X-Man looks down at them and says, Jean, mother, why do you have to keep fighting? Why can't you accept that this is the way it must be? I tried to be the son you wanted. I tried to be the one to usher the X-Men into the next age, but you've shown me that it's a journey I must make alone. In order for mutant kind to evolve, we have to first destroy our past. And Jean says, you've really forced our hand. We've tried to talk you out of this. We've tried to make you see reason, and I'm sorry it's come to this. I truly am, but you won't back down. And so meanwhile, Angel is flying Psylocke toward Storm and basically launches her like a missile toward Storm. So before Storm can react, Psylocke jumps on her back and stabs her through the head with the psychic blade, which does have the intended effect, which is to free Storm from X-Man's control. But unfortunately, it also renders her unconscious, which means Storm and Psylocke are plummeting toward the ground, and Angel is able to basically swoop in and grab them at the last moment to keep them from breaking their necks, basically. So once Psylocke is free, she's able to go and join Jean Grey and the rest of the telepaths, and Storm, meanwhile, is ticked off. She is super mad that she has been used this way by X-Man, and Psylocke, as she sees Storm fly off, says, oh God, will she be all right? And Angel says, who knows, being transformed against your will by a god who makes his desires your own. Yeah, it seems like Storm found her rage, so that's good for her. And so as Storm flies off toward X-Man, Psylocke realizes that, okay, Storm's about to do something probably pretty stupid, but it might actually help them. They need to be ready because she may be breaking down or distracting X-Man with this crazy suicidal attack of hers. And so sure enough, Storm gathers all the lightning that she can within her power, and she screams at X-Men that he might think that he's a god, but she's been a goddess longer than X-Man has even been alive. And she lets loose with a huge amount of lightning, and the force of the attack does distract Nate enough that the psychic X-Men, the X-Men with telepathic powers channeled and directed by the power of Jean Grey, are able to separate X-Man and Legion. So Legion, for his part, is unconscious, but alive. And X-Man is there as well. But as they're separated, what the rest of the X-Men realize is Jean is gone. And Psylocke realizes that Jean has become trapped inside of Nate Gray. So on the next page, we see Jean, and she's indeed inside X-Man's mind. And it's sort of a blank slate in a way. It's a bunch of white space, but at the same time, it's, you can look down on the, like, literally the floor you're standing on, and you can see the earth below. You can see the battlefield. You can see the X-Men who are still fighting the horsemen. We see them fighting against Magneto and Blob and Omega Red. And then X-Men says, "Hello, Jean." And Jean says, "Oh, so this is how you see the world, Nate, right? Like, you're above it all." And X-Men kind of shrugs it off and says, "Pop psychology is beneath you, Jean." And Jean says, "Yeah, and I would have thought it was beneath your mind, but yet here we are, right? This is your mind, not mine. I'm only commenting on what I see. And what I see is somebody who looks like they're trying very hard to play God." And X-Men says, "Well, how would playing God look any different than being God? You know the level of power right now, but if it bothers you, you know, you can make whatever world you want out of this landscape, Jean. Whatever makes you feel comfortable, you only need to ask." And Jean says, "What would make me comfortable is for you to stop this and help us set right everything that you've done wrong and repair the damage." And X-Men apologizes, saying, "No, Jean, that's not going to happen." And Jean's trying to understand. She's still trying to reason. Like, this can't be what you want. I know you're a good man. And X-Men says, as he turns his back and starts walking away from her, saying, how could you know that?" And so I will say, he may have godlike powers in this current iteration of X-Men, but he certainly doesn't have the wisdom of a god. And that, you know, I mean, this is a pretty petulant, passive-aggressive thing to say. How would you know? Again, kind of blaming Jean that he grew up without her as a mother. And remember, he basically was created in the Age of Apocalypse by Legion. You know, it's an alternate reality, an alternate dimension. This Jean is not technically his mother, but he's still going to hold it against her that she wasn't there to raise him. And again, it just seems pretty petty. But Jean apologizes anyway, saying, I know I've been absent for so much of your life. Scott, we're alive, he'd say the same thing. We weren't there when you needed us, but it doesn't change the fact that you became a good person on your own. And that's why this doesn't make sense, that you're hurting people. And he says, "Yeah, well, I know that I'm hurting people, but I'm doing something that you and the X-Men could never do. I'm saving this world." And Jean's like, but are you really? And X-Men's convinced that he is. And so Jean says, "Well, but how did it come to this?" And X-Men says, "Well, we evolved. I evolved. I evolved into somebody who could change things, who could remake the world as I see fit. So why wouldn't I? If I can fix what's broken, why wouldn't I do that?" And Jean says, you kind of sound like Apocalypse right now. And X-Men does not like that. He kind of turns her in anger and says, that's kind of a stupid thing to say. He's a tyrant and a lunatic. And just because we may share an opinion on something, it doesn't make us the same, right? Actions matter. Some men like to pretend they're gods, and some of us just are, right? So again, it's so out of character for X-Men. I guess I kind of understand it with what we learn that's going on with X-Men. He does a pretty good job of explaining it. And honestly, I don't think I know Nate Gray. I haven't read enough X-Men stories to know if this is out of character. But from what I know of him, it does seem out of character. So I don't know. It's kind of strange that these X-Men writers chose to make Nate Gray the big bad. I don't think he's necessarily a very compelling villain in that way, although he is interesting enough because he's not a mustache twirler, right? He's not like Apocalypse wanting to just conquer for the sake of conquering, or Mr. Sinister. He is much more complex than that. And you can kind of see his point, and he really is, kind of reminds me of Toyo Harada in a way, because he does want to make the world a better place, and he knows there's going to be suffering, and he knows, to borrow another expression, he's going to have to break some eggs if he wants to make the omelet. So Jean tells him, you think I don't know what it means to be a god, right? I mean, he's telling this to Jean, who's lived most of her life with the Phoenix Force, so She's like, yeah, I completely understand what you mean. And I know what it means to make decisions that you feel are inconsequential because you have unlimited power, or you feel like you have unlimited power. But those tiny little decisions or those tiny little actions ruin lives. And Nate says, don't talk to me about the Phoenix like I too am blinded by some fiery god. And Jean says, no, I'm not blaming the Phoenix. I'm talking about my own actions, the choices that I made when I had the Phoenix power. Like, Jean is completely owning it. Saying, I'm the one that caused that pain with the Phoenix, just like the pain that you're causing now with the power that you have. And then she says, let me show you, Nate. And she puts her hand on his forehead. And all of a sudden on the battlefield, we see that Nate Gray is very much staggered. And Dazzler says, we're getting through, don't let up. And Nate's talking about how much pain he's experiencing, that now that his mother is, Jean Grey is basically sharing the pain of all the lives that have been lost over the years through the actions of her using the Phoenix Force. The other thing that this does, the other side effect, is that Nate is so staggered that he no longer has control over the three remaining horsemen. So we see Magneto, Omega Red, and Blob kind of revert back to their own normal-looking personas. They're no longer controlled. Magneto's pretty pissed. He's saying, it seems we've been acting on behalf of another without our knowledge, and I'm going to show X-Man the error of attempting to manipulate Magneto. So meanwhile, in X-Man's mind, he's telling Jean, this is enough. Like, I understand. You can stop. And so Jean says, okay, they're gone. And X-Men says, did you think that I didn't know that people would suffer for what I'm doing, for the choices I'm making, that people wouldn't be hurt? And Jean says, well, maybe you knew that people would be hurt, but I don't think that you understood the pain and the suffering that people were going to experience because of the choices that you're making and this attempt to remake the world. And X-Men says, no, that's not true at all. My whole life has been suffering. Right, I was raised in a world that had only cruelty, you know, the world of the Age of Apocalypse, and I came here to this world thinking it would be different, but just found it to be the same, if only in a different way. Like, maybe the cruelty and the suffering was beneath the surface here. It was more hidden. It wasn't as overt. And I've been trapped between the two, and it's been tearing me apart because there's no good place to go. There's only these two different worlds that I'm trapped between, and they're both filled with suffering. And as my last act, I only wanted to make something better. I wanted to make a difference. I wanted to make sure my life meant something, basically. And Jean's like, wait, last act? And Nate says, yeah, I'm dying, and I wanted to do something good before I go. And then he shows her this life stone, this life seed that he's been given, and he explains that this is how he's increased his powers. And the first thought that Nate had when it came to him was that he would use it to save himself. But he wasn't able to do that. He wasn't able to cure himself from what he's dying of. And he thought, well, if I can't save myself, if I've been given this next level of power, this omnipotence, this huge amount of ability, the abilities of a god, and if I can't use those powers and abilities to save myself, then why did I get those powers if it wasn't to save myself? And as Jean embraces him, she says, I don't know. And X-Men says, well, I never wanted to hurt people. And so as they embrace, we see the X-Men basically pouring it on. Now that they've see X-Man staggered, we see Blob and Magneto and Omega Red having joined the fight. And Kitty is saying, Betsy, what's happening? All of a sudden, X-Man released his hold on Magneto and the other horsemen. And Psylocke says, well, I think the reason that he did that is because of Jean. She's inside X-Men's head. She must be getting through to him. And Kitty says, well, if we tear X-Men apart, I'm not sure she's going to make it back out, because we, as I said, we see the X-Men really pouring it on, firing all kinds of energy blasts at X-Men, who's inside this little force bubble. So back inside Nate's mind, he's telling Jean, you know, I must be here for a reason. And if I was given this gift and it wasn't to save myself, it's got to be for a reason. I can't have been given all this power to do nothing. And if I can't save myself, then at least maybe I can save the world. Maybe that's been my purpose all along. I never wanted to make people suffer. And Jean says, yeah, I know, but even you can't save everything, no matter what your powers are. You know, as an X-Men, you just do the best you can, and sometimes you just have to let it go. You have to realize that you can't solve every problem. And X-Men says, yeah, but to bring peace, sometimes there has to be suffering. Like, just like I said, right? In order to make an omelet, you've got to break some eggs, and that's basically what he's saying. He's saying the ends justify the means, which I never believe that. That's not my philosophy in life whatsoever, but there are plenty of people that think that. There's a whole, you know, branch of philosophy that's dedicated to that. Utilitarianism, basically, if you're faced with making a decision, you base it on what is going to create the most happiness, right? So, or the least amount of suffering if it's two bad choices. So if you have a situation where if you choose option A, a child will die and 1,000 people will live, or if you choose option B and the child lives but 1,000 people die, then you obviously choose A, right? Because it's the lesser of the two evils, basically. I've never believed that, but there's plenty of people that do. What am I thinking? I'm thinking of Star Trek, right? Wrath of Khan, the good of the many outweighs the good of the few, with Spock going to, you know, save the day at the end. You have been and always will be my friend, right? So there's plenty of examples in pop culture, movies, TV shows. Again, it's a concept that a lot of people can understand. Is it the right one? We've talked about this a lot on the podcast in the past, actually, as it pertains to Toyo Harada, who I mentioned previously. It's kind of who Nate is reminding me of here. And I've said in the past, I'll say it again here, it's fine to have people suffer, right? A small amount of people suffer if it means in the long run, you're going to have this perfect society where no one suffers. That's the philosophy, right? And so in the long run, there's no poverty, there's no disease, there's no war, and everybody lives in peace and harmony, and that's great. And you only have to kill, let's say, 10,000 people for that to happen. Well, if you're not one of the 10,000 people, then for you, it's great. And you feel like it's totally worth it. But if you're one of those 10,000 people, then it's not. Like, the X-Men is not a hero, right? If it's your son or your daughter or your mother or your father, whatever, whichever way you're touched by it, then all of a sudden the price starts to become too high. What difference does it make to you if the world ends up as a perfect utopia if you didn't survive to get to experience it? And then you have to start thinking, what price is too high? 10,000 people, 100,000 people, 200,000 people. If you can divide the population of Earth exactly in half and then take one person from side A and put them on side B, now all of a sudden side B is the most people. And so all of side A has to die in order for side B, which has the majority by one person, gets to experience happiness, right? And that's what utilitarianism says, right? The good of the many. And in this case, the many is only plus one, but technically that's more people, and so that's what you're going to go with. And that's what Nate is saying. He's saying to bring peace, there's got to be suffering. And he tells his mom, I don't understand why you don't like that, or you don't understand that. Everything I've tried to do, the world fought back, you fought back. You know, when I sent my horsemen out to stop like oil refineries and things like that, when I sent Magneto into war-torn areas to take away their weapons so they would stop shooting each other, you fought back. And I don't understand that. Like, I am trying to do good. And that's in Nate's mind. He is. He's trying to do good. He's totally buying into that philosophy that in the long run, this will be worth it. And once more, Gene pleads with him, please, Nate, just let it go. And X-Man says, no, Mother, you don't understand. And clearly I see what I have to do. You haven't left me any choice. I can't save the world, not when you and the X-Men are standing in my way. I can't make this world be a world where the X-Men belong, because you will always, always fight me. And if I remake the world, if I'm successful and I remake the world into what I think it should be, you will fight to change it back. And so what does Nate do? He releases all his power. He says, goodbye, X-Men. And remember, Jean had brought all the X-Men into that battle, all the former X-Men, the call had gone out, and he basically obliterates the X-Men. And so on the next page, we see Nate kneeling on the ground, and he actually even lays down on the ground. I'm not sure if he's dead. It kind of seems that way as he lays down on the shore and the waters wash him away, and all that's left is the little life seed that had helped give him the power. So after a page of all black, which I find to be really interesting, we get some narration from somebody. I'm not sure exactly who it is, but the narration is saying, just like that, they were all gone. And nobody knew exactly what happened, but nobody really cared, because all the damage that X-Man had done was all repaired. Everything that X-Man had done, everything that everybody had done, it was all undone. The world was returning to the way that it had been, as if nothing had happened, except for one difference. And that difference was no more X-Men. The X-Men were dead. And to the world's discredit, I'll say, they celebrated the deaths of those mutants, right? Mutants that, for a lot of people, they hated them, and they feared them, and they persecuted them. And not only were they now gone, they were being written out of the history books. Right, the X-Men's role in saving the planet time and time again was being diminished. And even though Senator Allen, who at the beginning, right from the start of this X-Men disassembled storyline, was championing this X-Men vaccine, this vaccine that would suppress the mutant gene, he had a change of heart based on what he learned and based on the heroism of Kitty Pryde. But by then it was too late. Right, the world saw that the X-Men were gone, and they embraced it, and so the world took this opportunity to make sure there would be no more Homo Superior. You know, enough of the fight for mutant rights and people with extraordinary powers that could kill or cause damage or wreak havoc, and so the laws were passed that families wouldn't have to deal with their children ever manifesting a mutation again. The vaccine, the anti-mutant vaccine, was put into immediate circulation. The age of mutants had come to an end, not with a roar, not with a giant battle, but really with silence. And this person who's narrating says, I can't help but think that someday, maybe years from now, people will finally realize what we all lost, because all the X-Men wanted to do was save the world from itself, but they're not there anymore to do that. And as I said, as this narration's going on, we see a lot of the repairs being undertaken to repair the damage that was done by X-Men. We see lines of people outside of hospitals to get their mutant and their anti-mutant vaccine. And we also see a figure in a blue hoodie wearing red sunglasses reading a newspaper that says, no more X-Men. Copy of the Daily Bugle, actually. And he wads it up and throws in the trash as he turns and walks away. And it's got to be Cyclops, right? It's got to be Cyclops. So that's how the issue and the storyline ends. And in a way, it's not really a satisfying conclusion. Because you almost feel like, okay, you built up this 10-week event, and it was really fast-paced, and for being 10 issues, it almost feels like there should have been more story, but then you really don't get that many answers. We don't know where Jean is. She was inside X-Man when the explosion went off, so wouldn't she have survived it? We don't know what happened to X-Man himself. Obviously the X-Men are not really gone, right? I mean, Cyclops should try to find a way to save him. So I don't know. I go back and forth. The event did feel consequential, and so in that way, it felt like a really good X-Men event, but it just didn't feel like there was as much there as a big X-Men event, Mutant Massacre or something like that. Inferno would be another one that was a big mutant event. It just, Avengers versus X-Men again. I mean, I'm glad there weren't a ton of crossovers and one-shots and tie-ins. I mean, that's what's going on now in the age of X-Men. So maybe this is more like an opening chapter of the overall event. You could think of it like that. So I did enjoy it. It did feel like an X-Men event, but it didn't feel like as much of an X-Men event as I sort of expected it to, if you know what I mean. Because again, I just feel like for 10 issues, it should have felt like we got more story in a way. The art was spectacular throughout. There was a lot of giant panels and really cool explosions and things like that. And so I guess in that way, it probably took a little bit of real estate away from the story. So I don't know. I just feel like there was a little bit of something missing, whether it was maybe the emotional beats of the story didn't necessarily resonate with me. I mean, I feel like we didn't really get that much emotion until this last issue with Nate and Jean kind of explaining each of their positions, right? But I don't know. Again, I just feel like there was, in terms of comparing it to some really classic old school X-Men events, like I mentioned Inferno or Mutant Massacre, it just, Age of Apocalypse. This one just felt like it was missing a little something. So I'm not sure, but I'll be reading the Age of X-Men stuff. We'll be talking about it on the podcast. So all that to come. And maybe once I've read all that, then, I'll be able to kind of have some perspective on this first part of the overall epic story that's being told right now and look at it with a little bit of a different opinion, if you will. I am really excited that Cyclops is back. And it's funny because I've never really been a big Cyclops fan, but I just feel like he's been gone long enough. And I feel like, he's not my favorite X-Man by any stretch, but the X-Men aren't the X-Men without him. I'll say that. He's sort of their backbone, their foundation, you could say. So I think he's easily the most important X-Man. I think in order to have an X-Men team, you need to have Cyclops, and you need to have Jean Grey, and you need to have Professor X. Those are the three, in my mind, that you need in order for it to be an X-Men title. Anything else is, they can be X-Men, but it doesn't feel like X-Men. So, I don't know. Will we get Professor X to show back up? He's been gone a really long time, too. I mean, we've got Jean Grey back. We've got Cyclops back. That's great. Just need to get Professor X back now, and I'll be happy. So, again, it's a great jumping on point right now for the X-Men. There's a lot of great stories going on, and what spins out of this, I can't wait to see. Not necessarily looking forward to reading all the different Age of X-Men tie-ins, but I probably will. I probably won't be able to help myself. I'll certainly check out the first issues of each, but I'm more excited to actually just keep reading this Uncanny X-Men title as it transitions from this weekly title to, I think it's going to be monthly or maybe bi-weekly, so I guess we'll see. But I definitely recommend this story if you want to jump on, if you haven't been following the X-Men in years, in my case. I basically picked up the Phoenix Resurrection, The Return of Jean Grey, and the Exterminated storyline, which resolved the storyline that's been going on for 10 years now, I guess, of the young X-Men who were brought forward in time. And then I read the Multiple Man miniseries that Matthew Rosenberg did recently. And there's a good 20 years of X-Men history where I have not been following at all. So, and I was still able to you know, read those few and then jump right in with the X-Men Disassembled weekly storyline. And I caught on right away. So, if you haven't read the X-Men in a long time and you've been missing them, I think, again, now's a good time. I think these writers, Matthew Rosenberg, Ed Brisson, Kelly Thompson, they're all huge X-Men fans. They read a lot of X-Men comics as they were growing up. And I think that they, one of their goals was and is to sort of clean up the kind of the X-Men corner of the universe, make it a little less convoluted, make it a little more easy to understand and easy to digest and easy to jump on. So I think now is a perfect time. So I hope you guys check it out. Let me know what your thoughts are. And even if you don't read the X-Men Disassembled storyline, I really recommend picking up the X-Men Annual 1 because it explains how Cyclops came back, which that was like a really, because, you know, he was done. He sacrificed himself, and he doesn't have, you know, any Phoenix-like abilities. That, you know, the Phoenix Force has always sort of been Jean Grey's gateway back to being alive, basically. And Scott doesn't have that. So I'll be talking about the annual on an upcoming episode, but I've already read it, and it's really great what they came up with. You know, it's still, yeah, it's a little far-fetched, but, you know, comics. So you got to always take it with a grain of salt. But I like the fact that he's back, and I can't wait to see how he brings the X-Men back, how he sort of undoes this cataclysmic event that X-Men triggered that killed all the X-Men. That's going to be really interesting. So last thing I'll say about the issue really quickly is the art by Pereira Perez was really, really great. As I said, all the artists that worked on this weekly event did a great job. A lot of bigger panels and a lot of splash pages that helped to make it a quick read, which is probably part of the reason that it doesn't feel quite as substantial as I would like a big X-Men event to feel. But it also, in doing that and using big panels and a lot of splash pages, you get a lot of really cool images, first of all. But the other thing it does is it really speeds up the pace. And that's another reason that it feels like, yeah, this was 10 issues, but it flew by really fast because it's a very fast-paced story. So really, really enjoyed it. So thanks for joining us, everybody. Please tell your friends about us. Subscribe and rate us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever platform you use. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, all past episodes of the podcast are available on all those platforms as well as at lrmonline.com. While you're at the site, please check out all the other pop culture coverage of your favorite and upcoming movies and TV shows. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes as well as follow our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.